The other day I talked to Kate Daly on Fox News 1450 KZNU in St. George, Utah, and I thought you might like to hear our conversation.
Hi there. Welcome back to the Kate Daly Show on the Fox News Channel. Introducing Lou Rockwell. Welcome to the show.
Kate, great to be with you.
Great to be with you. This is so exciting because I am such a fan. Can I say I'm such a fan of yours? And I love your work. I love your website. I go there daily. And I just want to say thank you for that.
Oh, gosh, I appreciate your reading it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't do the show without looking at what you have to say. So, Lou, let me introduce you just a little bit to the audience. Founder and chairman of the Mises Institute, former chief of staff to Ron Paul, colleague of Murray and Rothbard, who is an opponent of the state, its wars, its socialism. You edit LouRockwell.com, the number one libertarian site on earth. You've authored many best-selling books, and the latest book is Against the State, an anarcho-capitalist manifesto. What an honor to have you. So welcome.
Well, it's wonderful to be on your show again.
Have you ever been to Southern Utah?
I have driven through Southern Utah, yes. I've not spent any time there, but it's a beautiful country.
Oh, absolutely. You'll need to come back. We'll need to have you. So you let me know next time you're coming through town.
Okay.
So many questions I have for you. And I think one of the biggest ones, Lou, and I want to make sure and ask this question and not save it to the end so that we don't have time for this. Who do you trust? Where do you go for your reliable news sources on a daily basis to see what's going on in the world?
Well, I think one has to be a critical consumer of news, even from sites that we normally like. But I like to look at the British newspapers. Mm-hmm. I look at libertarian sites in this country. I look at some Russian sites that are in English. I did study Russian as a kid, but unfortunately, I can't read it anymore.
That'd be difficult. I don't think I could take on Russian for sure. That'd be hard.
You know, I even look at sites like the New York Times and the Washington Post, although I very seldom find anything I trust in there. But it's always interesting to see what the regime wants you to believe.
Absolutely.
I really look at a huge number of sites. I have many wonderful people all over the world who send me articles that they think I should be paying attention to, which I appreciate very much.
I love that.
So really, it's very diverse. The things go into the formation of my site every day, for example.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we've just had the Republican debate. I don't even know what to call it. Dog and pony show. It certainly seemed that way. And what are your thoughts on Trump? Everybody's trying to figure out what he's trying to do or trying to accomplish. And I liked your thoughts. Will you want to share those with the audience?
Well, first of all, of course, this is not a debate. A debate is between two people.
I agree.
You can't have a debate with 10 people and three moderators.
Sure.
So it's a forum. Mm-hmm. I thought it was, by and large, very boring, mm-hmm. like all these things are. But of course, Trump is interesting.
Yeah.
And that's what one of the things that attracts us to him. What do I think about him? I think that why he's so appealing to people is because they find him plain spoken, mm-hmm. That he's not part of the political establishment. He's not been a lifelong politician like most of them, mm-hmm. That he's actually run a big business, made a lot of money, accomplished a lot, and he just is outside the system. And he doesn't play by any of the rules that the system would like us to play. So would he actually be somebody who should be ruling over us? Well, it's my view, nobody should be ruling over us. And it's why I always put Ron Paul in a different category, because he did not and does not want to rule over anybody. He does not actually want to exercise power. The unfortunate thing about people who go into politics, virtually all of them, they want to run your life. They want to run your family, your neighborhood, your business, your church. They're a bad bunch of people. Some of the ancient Greek city-states elected public officials by lot, mm-hmm. Which they felt was a way of overcoming this business that people who wanted the power should be kept away from the power. But anyway, Trump has made – I'm interested in politics. I used to be involved in politics before going straight. Mm-hmm. So I'm – even though I think it's a very negative thing for society, it still interests me like a train wreck or something. So,
it does. It's like a car crash. You can't stop watching it.
Yeah. So I follow it. I find it interesting. Trump is, of course, extremely interesting. And, I like the fact that everybody hates him.
Yeah.
The Republican Party hates him. The media hate him. But he has a very strong following. And I think it's not because of his policy positions, whatever those are. Mm-hmm. I always think of policy as a synonym for lie. But it's just his style. People like his style. They like the way he talks, the way he acts. He's not part of the political class. I think that's why people find him entrancing.
Absolutely. You know, his candor is refreshing. And I wonder if the right likes his candor as much as the left likes Bernie Sanders' candor. Do you know what I mean? But beyond that, is there anything else that they have to offer? I'm not quite sure on both of them. I mean, obviously, Sanders is a total socialist. But then again, a lot of the candidates really are under the covers. So
that's right.
So
most of the Republicans are socialists, too, by the standards of the way people would look at socialism in a previous age. Bernie Sanders pretends to be for peace. He's not. He's a warmonger, as many socialists are. Of course, Lenin or Trotsky or the worst socialists of history have always been mass murderers. So that's nothing unusual. In the Republican case, I don't think the Republicans don't like Trump's candor. They don't like. There's a specific way you're supposed to act. You're supposed to be like Jeb Bush, be boring and earnest and ripping off the people while pretending to serve them. I mean, that's the model. And also people like the fact that they feel Trump can't be bought, that all these other candidates are wholly owned. They're owned by the Koch brothers or Sheldon Adelson or Chamber of Commerce or the military industrial complex, the medical industrial complex. Mm-hmm. They're all owned. So Trump is seen, correctly or incorrectly, as unowned, and he can't be bought. So that's very, very popular to people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've heard this, and I wanted you to weigh in on this to see what you thought, but that the field is so large because they'd like to dilute it to the point where people like Ted Cruz or Rand Paul could not stand out. And those are the two conservative contenders they would like to not see. When I say they, the establishment, would not like to see in the race. Do you agree with that?
Well, they definitely have certain candidates they would like to see. I mean, I think probably it's Bush and Walker.
Sure.
And the Republicans, of course, it's Clinton and for the Democrats. There are certain people who have been groomed, who are controlled, who can be trusted to always do what the power elite would like them to do. And they get very disturbed if it seems like that's not going to happen. They didn't like Ron Paul, for example, because, again, he was not controlled. He couldn't be bought. That's the kind of candidate they really fear.
Do you think anyone could actually abolish the Fed? I mean, I just see that as anyone that's ever tried to even speak up against it ends up dead. So I just wondered, do you think that we as a nation could support that? Do you think that the establishment would ever allow that to happen unless it was completely broken? I don't know how it would ever happen.
So. They would never allow it, except sometimes that things get out of their control in a horrible crisis. We are facing a horrible crisis, a monetary crisis, financial crisis, and economic crisis. I think we all feel something's coming on. We can sort of feel the ground is not quite steady under our feet from an economic standpoint. We're all worried about the economic future for ourselves and for our families and for our society. In that kind of a situation, when the dollar breaks down as an international currency and breaks down internally here, if there's vast amounts of inflation or vast amounts of deflation can sometimes be destabilizing to people. Deflation is always to be preferred because it means your money's worth more. So under that kind of a circumstance, can you have significant reform, something like either, if not the abolition of the Fed, the dramatic cutting back of the Fed? Mm-hmm. When there's real trouble, and I'm afraid there is real trouble coming, people are willing to look at big changes. And that's the job of those of us who try to spread these kinds of ideas, to try to be ready for this, to try to educate our fellow Americans to the extent we can about what is the right way to proceed when the Keynesian bomb explodes.
True, true. And while we're watching the dog and pony shows, this is going on behind the scenes and people aren't noticing it. I fear that. And I fear they're not asking the right questions anyway in these types of debates. They're not asking how these candidates are leveraged. They're not asking these candidates where their money is coming from their campaign. It's just very vanilla type questions. And you can't gauge anything from that. And we're all trying to gauge who's going to get that vote, who's going to take my vote. And honestly, does it matter? It's sort of a pseudo presidency because of those that are clearly running the game. And so what are we missing? What do you think is our biggest threat out there?
You know, you make a great point. I always think of the president as sort of a little smiley face button on the lapel of the oligarchy.
Yes.
I mean, the president is not actually running the country. First of all, one guy couldn't possibly do such a thing anyway. But there's an oligarchy of government. And there's, of course, a financial oligarchy and a corporate oligarchy and get on the list. He can have a very strong influence. A president who's in there for a long time can sometimes, have a good deal of control, but they're never entire. The civics book picture of the president as running things is just not true.
Right. It's sort of ridiculous. And here we're all caught up in this yet. And it is, it's like a car crash. You can't stop watching. But at the same time, there are rumblings and things going on in the world that we must pay attention to. And even the upcoming wars that the war hawkish would love to get us into at this point in time. You know, a lot of people don't understand what war actually brings. They think it just costs us money. This is not true. There's so much money in war and rebuilding contracts. When people talk about war, what do you want people to understand about what war actually does and has done in the last 100 years for us?
First, I want to mention Ron Paul's new book, Swords into Plowshares, which I think is just a tremendous book on what is war, why it's not a good idea, how it comes about. And it's very, very interesting reading, and you don't need to be an expert on anything to understand it. He's such a great communicator. What is war? It's mass murder. Mm-hmm. That's what war is. Mm-hmm. It's where the government kills a bunch of people, destroys a whole bunch of property, and where the companies associated with the government get rich. The average person maybe gets wounded, maybe gets killed if they're a soldier. Certainly, their standard of living is lowered by war, and there are people who make vast, you know, trillions of dollars off war on the other end. Mm-hmm. But it really is, it's killing people. A lot of times, if we look at the American wars right now, killing people who never did anything to us. Nobody in Iraq ever did anything to us. And yet we've killed millions of Iraqis, totally destroyed their country, blown up all their cities. Americans don't seem to care about this. Oh, well, they're just towel heads or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they're human beings. They're also God's children. Mm-hmm. And they have a right not to be destroyed, not to have bombs fall on their house and kill their children. U.S. is killing people in Yemen right now. They're killing people in many places all over the world. They're constantly coming up with bigger and more effective bombs, more horrific gas warfare and biological warfare, and of course, all the atomic weapons and so forth. It's a very nasty business. One could say, as Ron does, if you're under attack, then you have a right to respond, but you don't have a right to just go halfway around the world and kill a bunch of people. I mean, it's one of the great ways to look at government as versus in a libertarian sense. Mm-hmm. The government is subject to the same moral laws as the rest of us. So if something would be considered murder, if you or I did it, because some guy is in a government suit doesn't mean it's not murder. Let's say we bombed a building for reasons we would think were perfectly good reasons. We couldn't get away with that. We'd go to jail and maybe be executed and so forth. If it's the government, why, it's, you know, it's a great thing. It's perfectly fine. And the government is always above the law in its own conception. And it's our job to think about the government. And this is a matter of thinking, first of all, before action, that it's just subject to the same laws. Just because they call it taxation doesn't mean it's not theft. If you or I went out and grabbed some percentage of somebody's income, that would be considered theft, and rightly so. The government does it. Why? It's, you know, a public service to take your money. But no, it's not. The exact same rules apply to them morally and should apply to them in every other sense as apply to you and me.
That's absolutely true. I love that comment, because we're not understanding that. I've often thought to myself, as Hillary Clinton and you know, fairly Republican candidates as well, opt to spend other people's money and then claim credit for that. It's so interesting to me. You know, if we made people write thank you notes to the middle class for funding whatever money they're taking, can you imagine how things would change if you were forced to write those notes for those sending them and receiving them? How much that would change the way we look at plunder.
So it's so interesting when you see, say, the income tax returns of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton when they were in the White House, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, these people, they are so cheap. I mean, even though they've got big incomes, they give virtually nothing to charity, although they're blabbing about it all the time.
Isn't that
that's the way they are.
I look at Robert Reich the same way. You know, every time he comes out with an article, I'm thinking, well, what did you do today?
Yeah, make trouble.
What did you do? Yes. What did you do on a personal level? You know, they wrote the Bill of Rights, the Founding Fathers, to keep us from being a monarchy. How did the Constitution sort of put out the thought of centralized government? Did it do that? Is that why they had to follow it up with the Bill of Rights?
Yes. If the Constitution, unfortunately, was a big step up in centralization and government power from the Articles of Confederation, which was the revolutionary government, probably the most libertarian government ever to exist. For example, to raise taxes required unanimous consent of all the states. Mm. In other words, it was very difficult, just to take one example, to raise taxes. The bad guys, Alexander Hamilton and others, wanted to change that. They wanted really a British system without the king, with themselves as the king.
Sure.
one of the things the Constitution enabled them to do was they had bought up all the bonds that had been issued by the Continental Congress during the Revolution, which then had gone down to about 1 cent on the dollar. And they bought all these bonds for 1 cent or less than 1 cent on the dollar. And then they voted themselves that these all should be redeemed at 100 cents on the dollar. That was like the first thing they did. Gary North points out, based on Great History of Taxation by Alvin Rabushka at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University, that one of the key results of the adoption of the Constitution was a tripling of taxes as to what they had been under George III. The Bill of Rights was a big help, although the whole thing never would have been able to have been passed if there had been no Bill of Rights. Because if you look at the Constitution without the Bill of Rights, it's not a good document. Mm-hmm. My own preference would be we should have kept the Articles of Confederation. Mm. It was really, I would argue, a coup that took place in Philadelphia because they assembled to look at ways to amend the Articles, and then they just tossed it out and brought in this much more centralized system. Hans Hermann Hoppe, the great German philosopher and economist, argues that every single adoption of a constitution in world history has been talked about as a restriction on government, actually has been exactly the reverse. So I know this is unusual stuff to be hearing.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to go back to the constitutional government as versus what we've got now, well, we'd all be living in heaven. I mean, it would be like Elysium or something. That's so horrible. No, horrible as the present system is.
Right. I honestly don't think we'd know what to do with that much freedom. I mean, how limited could we get in government? Because, you know, there are people out there that feel that even the Department of Education is so necessary and so needed. And nobody said a word when No Child Left Behind came on board. Yet you evolved that into Common Core. Now everybody's finally upset.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize what the implication of centralized government has done to our society or the reality of what it's done to our society. Could we have a limited government and still be with the mindset that we have today? I don't know that we could because we've almost enslaved ourselves into thinking that this is how it should be, right?
Kate, I think you're right. This is why we have to change hearts and minds. If we were just to wave a magic wand and abolish the government or most of the government in Washington, and it's a nice idea, would people accept it? Would they want they still believe in Medicare and they believe in Social Security and they believe in the welfare system, and they believe that they're going to be killed if the government isn't protecting them from unspecified dangers or phony dangers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand. You mentioned the Department of Education.
Yeah.
That may be the worst aspect of government intervention in our lives is the idea that they're in control of the education of our children. I mean, it's an unbelievable outrage. This is, of course, the Department of Indoctrination. It's all about teaching children the government story of our history, mm-hmm. which is not the truthful story.
True.
To teach them to obey the government, pay taxes, go fight the wars the government wants. It's perfectly okay for the government to look at anything in their lives. They should have no privacy. They should just be an automaton for the state.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been horrifically damaging. And that's why, of course, homeschooling is so important and why good private schools are so important. Public schools are just horrific. And if we can think what the sex education classes are going to be like now that the Supreme Court has had these edicts on various things, it's going to be horrific. No parent should send their kid to the public schools. Everybody should get their children out of the public schools.
I absolutely agree with that because we're going to be heading into boarding school soon. And if people don't realize that that is the notion, the next angle is to oust parents and keep those kids until 9 o'clock at night so they just go home to a bed. And we don't realize that that is on the agenda, that this is what's coming. And it's frightening. I have kids in school. It's frightening.
That absolutely is their agenda, to break the parent-child bond.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure that parents are not in charge of the children, the government is in charge. And there's a document put together by the Truman administration
mm-hmm.
in 1948 about looking at, well, how do we change the schools in order to fight the Cold War, with the excuse of fighting the Cold War. And one of the things, this is the James B. Conant, who was the president of Harvard, was the chairman of this. And one of the things he said was, we must get rid of all the small schools, because in small schools, it's too easy for the children to still be, I'm paraphrasing, but this is what he said,
mm-hmm.
loyal to parents and to their community. They have to only be loyal to the federal government. He said, therefore, we have to have giant schools.
Jeez.
This is where the whole idea of 3,000 kid high schools, which, of course, are horrendous,
yes.
Come from. The government doesn't like us. We're simply our cash cows to them. They fear us. They want to control us. We're living in a 1984 style regime right now. They want to make it worse. It's so important to wake up and do what you can. One of the things is keep your children out of the hands of the government, out of the public school teachers. They're all, for example, very anti-boy, just to take one particular thing. Boys have a very tough time in the public schools because of the way the thing is set up. They're constantly being told they're responsible for all evil in history and that sort
so
of thing.
It's so true. It's absolutely—
Get your kids out.
Yeah. I agree with you. And if you're not, I think every parent out there should be saying, I'm a homeschooling parent, even if your kids are attending still public school, mine are. But I'll tell you what, our dinner table, it's all homeschooling because you have to re-educate them when they get home. And we're really close to pulling the kids out right now. I'll tell you that.
Kate, good for you. Good for you.
It's tough when you realize what they're learning and how they're learning it and what that will mean for their future. And we just don't get it. We're just not awake enough to say we don't need this public education system the way that it's built. So I can't stress that enough. And I know you probably are a firm believer in that as well.
Yes.
You know, weigh in on Utah. Here we are live in Utah. I'm sorely disappointed, of course, in our congressmen. Our congressmen seem to be voting in quantities of four. They seem to be leaning on each other and say, well, he voted for it, so I am too, which I hate that excuse. But what about our senators? I'm going to probably guess how you feel about Hatch, but what about Mike Lee? What is your thought?
I think Mike Lee says a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. I apologize to you that I don't actually know what his record is, although I'm always suspicious of these guys. Mm-hmm. You can't go by what they say.
Right.
Does he actually vote with Hatch? Hatch, of course, one of the monsters of Washington, D.C.
Oh, absolutely.
Does he vote with him? I don't know. I do know that a lot of these guys who talk a good game actually vote in a horrific way. So I hope that's not Mike Lee, but I apologize. I don't know.
You know, he didn't, but he was the one that co-authored the Freedom Act. And anytime you see freedom or liberty, I can't imagine how these words are used, but it's absolutely not with the NSA spying. And so that worried me, and also him not showing up for the TPP vote, which I thought was a really big vote. He didn't show. And that bothered me. Those are the two things that have bothered me so far. Everything else,
well,
I'm okay.
Yeah. You're right to be bothered. And of course, the trade pact is unbelievably evil, sort of a world government thing that is not free trade, although they use those words. It's crony trade. It's special deals for big corporations connected with the government here and in other countries doing bad things to the people of America and other countries. And as to the so-called Freedom Act, in some ways, it's worse than the Patriot Act. So he didn't do anybody any favors by being in favor of that and authoring it. Of course, he didn't author it. He's given the bill. The NSA wrote the bill. He's given it. He doesn't, you know, he probably hasn't even opened it up, let alone read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just changing seats on who collects the information. It doesn't make me feel better about the collection.
No, and probably private companies are a heck of a lot more efficient than the government.
Yes.
So it's actually a bad thing, I think
to have so
private,
too.
And it loops those companies more into the government realm, and not a good thing. Very bad.
Right. We had a question from the audience, and that was, how do you feel about the ConCon? How do you feel about that?
There was a time when I was very much opposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I mean, I don't know. I it would depend on the composition of it, and I'm afraid I don't think that changing the Constitution means much of anything. They pay no attention to the Constitution now.
I agree.
Why would anybody assume that if you add, you know, another a couple of articles, they're going to pay attention to those versus the ones they already don't pay attention to? I'll be interested if it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not terrifically opposed to it, but I think it's not going to do anything good. Maybe it won't do anything evil. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we only have a couple more minutes, and I wish we had so much more time with you because it's so fascinating to talk to you, Lou. What are your thoughts on what's coming in the future? What are you most aware of right now? What are you kind of keeping your eye on the most right now, internationally or nationally? What's on your mind?
Well, I think I'm probably concerned about the exact same things you are. I'm concerned about the growing police state in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned about what's happening economically. I'm concerned about all the current wars and planned wars that nobody even seems to pay attention to. And just the world march towards totalitarianism is what's been happening ever since 9/11. On the other hand, in other countries and in our country, young people really are a beam of light, not all of them, but there are so many young people who are understanding what's going on, who fear for their own futures as well as the future of society, whether they're going to be able to have a job or not, but the kind of college debt that they're carrying or will be carrying. They're anxious for the truth. A lot of them are learning the truth. And the younger generation gives you a lot of heart and hope for the future. Not all of them, but many, many of them. And I think that's just tremendously heartening.
Absolutely. What are your views on civil disobedience? Because it seems as though that's the only thing left for us to do.
Well, I hesitate to recommend it because it seems to me something every individual has to choose because, of course, there can be horrific consequences. Certainly, we have a right to civil disobedience. There's times when it's absolutely a necessity. Maybe this is already happening. There's so many crimes being committed by the government on a daily basis, so many crimes committed by people associated with the government. Yeah, we have to resist. We have to say no. We'll see what's coming. But I think we're going to see a whole lot more civil disobedience, especially when there's real economic trouble. We're going to see civil unrest. We're going to see of the wrong kind as well as the right kind. I mean, people looting and stealing, other people wanting to hold the government responsible, wanting a better system for themselves and their children, their grandchildren.
Absolutely. Do you see this economic demise coming sooner than we think? Or do you think that it's we have some time here? What are your thoughts?
I wish I knew that. I'd be rich, right?
Exactly.
I don't know. I have a feeling that it's coming pretty soon. I mean, I hope to goodness that we would have another 20 or 30 years.
Sure.
Where my guess is, within the next couple of years. But really, I don't know. Nobody should take me as an investment advisor. But I think we're getting close to some very serious things. Maybe the worst kind of worldwide depression that we've seen since the 1930s.
Yeah, and it's a scary thought, but we need to get prepared and really sort of wake up and look around and say, you know, things are rumbling, and we need to take some action. So,
buying some gold coins is a good idea, especially U.S. gold coins from the 19th century and the early 20th century, because we know they're targeting bullion coins.
Great point.
So have some old $20 gold pieces, something like that. Not in your safe deposit box. You can't trust the bank, but in your own hands, buried in your backyard or whatever, not telling anybody, of course.
Absolutely. Our secret.
Don't trust the banks.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much, Lou, for coming on the show. I so appreciate you.
Kate, it's an honor, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today. Take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.